Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Street, so it feel right. Marcus Liberty, a legend on and off the coat, to give you what you need. Robert Reed is your co-host.
Go, get, go,
yeah.
Go.
Like and subscribe and follow, like a crossover. Never know what might fall through this bitch tomorrow. So, All Ball Chicago. All Ball Chicago.
I need
All Ball Chicago. All I know is All Ball Chicago. All Ball Chicago. All Ball Chicago.
I need
All Ball Chicago. All I know is All Ball Chicago.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of All Ball Chicago. I'm your co-host, Robert Bobby Reed, and I got the legend, the NBA veteran, the McDonald All-American, your host, Marcus, living in the building. What's up, Marcus?
What's up, my beautiful people?
And we got a special guest in the building today. One of the Hall of Fame journalists from back in the days. He's been covering the NBA. He's been covering the NFL. He's been covering sports for as long as anybody been covering sports. Give it up for Mr. David Aldridge, baby.
Oh, man, I love the energy on this show, man. Thank y'all for having me. I really appreciate it.
I couldn't wait to do that, man. I couldn't sleep last night, Liv. I was practicing that, man.
No doubt, man. And David, man, it's a pleasure to have you on our show, All Ball Chicago.
Thank you,
and we
man.
Know you represent the DMV. You know,
yes, sir.
Maryland, the Virginia area. So, but we always start off by saying, who put the rock in your hand? But we know you've been in the media for so long. So who put the pen and pad in your hand?
Oh, man. Man, that's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of different people. Like my high school, one of my high school English teachers was like the first person that said, you know, you write pretty well. You should think about like, you ever thought about like journalism? And I was like, not really. You know, I mean, I thought about it a little bit, but you know, I really thought, fellas, I was going to be a history teacher. That was what I thought I was going to be. You know, like that's kind of what I liked, history, and I thought I was good at it. So I thought that's what I was going to be. But yeah, my high school teacher, Mr. Carroll, was one of the first to kind of like put that bug in my head. And then some other people, when I went to college here in DC at American University, I had a couple of professors that were like really like pushing me towards it. So that, and then I started working at the school paper there, and I really just liked it. It really just was kind of, it flowed. It was natural to me. You know, it felt natural. Like I didn't feel out of place. I didn't feel like I was in over my head. I felt like I can do this, you know, like I know I can do this. So that really kind of got me going on that path.
It's interesting that you say that, David, that seems like the same thing that happens to most kids in basketball.
Right, exactly.
Something good in them and tries to steer them in that direction. So you had someone like that did that to you as well as a journalist. And I see a lot of people believing in themselves, but they also need that little push, somebody Absolutely. To see something that they may not see to yeah. get them over the hump.
You need adults to believe in you. You know what I mean? Like when you're a kid and you, like you have confidence, but it's not based on anything, right? Like it's just kind of natural confidence. But when an adult person takes the moment to say, hey, I see something in you, you know, there's something in you that you need to think about, you need to try to nurture and work on and get better at. And that can be a teacher, it can be a coach. You know, if you start playing at a young age and a coach says, man, you got something, you need to improve your left hand. You need to do better. You know, you need to know how to hit a curveball, whatever it is. You know, like if somebody believes in you, that kind of gets you going. And that's what happened to me. And I'm sure it's what happened to you. And it's what happened to everybody that kind of has some successes at some point, some adult, and it could be a parent too, believed in them, you know, and that gets you going.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk a little bit about basketball.
Sure.
Let's talk about the different eras, you know, and you covered both. You covered the Michael Jordan era.
Yeah.
You also covered the Kobe Bryant and LeBron James era.
Yep.
Do you think because you hear this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Could Michael Jordan play in this era? Vice versa. Could LeBron play in MJ's era?
Yeah.
So what's your take on that?
I think, Marcus, you know this. Great players could play in any era, right? If you're great, that's like saying Ali couldn't box now. Like, what are you talking about? Ali can box in any era. Yeah, he can fight in any era. He's great, you know. So, yeah, LeBron could have played back in the 80s because he's big and strong. He would have gotten used to the physicality and been able to deal it out. But as I've said to many people over the last couple of years, like, Marcus, you know this. Can you imagine MJ with no hand check? Are you nuts? What do you tell? You know what I mean? Like, with no head check, they can just come down the lane and isn't gonna get knocked on his ass. Come on, man, what are you talking about? Like, the dude will be averaging like 40 a game. You know what I'm saying? So, come on, nice. He would be great in this era. He would dominate in this era. And the other thing that people always come back at me was, he didn't shoot threes. Well, nobody shot threes back then, really. Right. There was a couple cats. You know, Dale Ellis shot threes. You know, Dale Curry shot threes. But other than that,
right,
there just weren't many guys that did that regularly, right?
Mm-hmm. So I think that we was taught different, you know.
Yeah, of course. We was taught
the mid-range game.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. You get to your spot and you go, you know, and that's your spot. And that's where you do work. And, you know, so – whoever it was, like, you know, I covered the Bullets. So, Jeff, you remember Jeff Malone. Jeff Malone would come off a screen, rise up from 18. That was his shot. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That was his shot. You know, and there were Ricky Pierce. There were so many guys that lived with that mid-range. Mm-hmm. So my thing is always, okay, if the three was important back then, you think those guys wouldn't have been shooting threes?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, so come on. You can't just look at numbers. That's why I kind of get into it with the analytics people, because they just think everything can be reduced to a number sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, you have to tell me what rules we're playing under. If we're playing under 80s rules, it's different than if we're playing under today's rules. It's just completely different.
Right. Oh, man. It's interesting you say that too, man, because we get that a lot with kids, you know, that get so caught up in the analytics of the game that they forget the talent. You know, sometimes they talent will get them there, and then they get caught up with, they say, I need to shoot more threes, you know, and then they start trying to shoot threes when that's not their game.
Not what they do, right.
And I get so upset with that. You know, like LeBron James, I'm going to just take LeBron James for instance. I don't think LeBron James is a great three-point shooter.
Right.
But LeBron James is a hell of a skilled basketball player.
Absolutely. You know?
So a lot of people knock him. Well, he can't shoot. This guy is, what, third or second all-time league scorer?
All-time scoring, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I get confused with that, man. So
yeah, no
question. What do you think about this generation, like with all the threes, because we just talked a little bit about it, but
yeah,
do you think Steph Curry, because he makes it look so easy, he has a lot of people out there watching him thinking that they can just go out there and do it?
Oh, sure. And I think Mark Jackson has talked about this, about how what he's trying to say is he thinks Steph in some ways has hurt the game because everybody thinks they can do what Steph does. And they can't, you know what I mean? Like, they can't.
No.
Steph is the guy. He's the guy. He's changed the game. You know, just like Elgin Baylor changed the game. Just like Dr. J changed the game. Like Michael changed the game. Like LeBron and Kobe changed the game. Steph Curry's changed the game of basketball. Because this is, nobody was taking logo shots on the regular until he started doing it.
Not at all.
Now everybody tries to do it, you know? And so that's changed the game. But he makes his percentage of makes is so much more high, I think, than most guys that shoot regularly from that distance. And maybe, you know, Dame is there out there now. Maybe Trae Young will wind up being there, but there's still not too many cats to shoot like 40% on logo shots. Right. You know, so Steph has changed the geometry of basketball, changed it forever.
Wow. And who was one of the guys that, because we try to be all positive on our show too. Who was one of the guys that you really love to interview? Like you couldn't wait to interview this guy.
Oh, well, back in the day, there were a lot of guys, because guys, I don't know, it was different back then. the media wasn't viewed as negatively as it is now. And guys understood that, you know, they could help themselves with by having good relationships with the media. So, you know, Magic was always great to talk to. Chuck was my favorite because, you know, Chuck would no matter what the situation was with the Sixers, you could go to Philly and Chuck would fill up your notebook with something crazy. You know, he would say something crazy. So I love talking to him. He was always available, accessible, enjoyed talking to him. Again, when I was covering the Bullets, Daryl Walker, who you guys know from Chicago, I'm sure. D-Walk was so – you just respect guys that are always there whether you win or lose. Mm-hmm. It's easy to talk when you win. Everybody's happy when you win. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you lose, that's when you find out who the real guys are that are still going to talk to you. And Daryl Walker talked to me every night and would tell me the God's honest truth as he saw it. Doesn't mean he was always right, but he would tell me the truth, you know. And you respect people like that. And Jeff Malone was good too. He was very good too on those teams. But D-Walk was always, he was always there. He was always honest. You know, he never ducked his own responsibility if they had played bad. And you just respect people like that, man. You respect people like that. But there were a lot of guys around the league that just were good stand-up guys. Joe Dumars was another one that you could always talk to no matter what the situation was going on with the Pistons. He was always there. He was always legit, honest. Sally was funny. You know, John was always had the jokes and would always say something funny, you know. So, but around the league, I mean, there was just so many guys. Nate McMillan was another guy that I just really liked talking to because he was real honest. But, you know, you name me a city, I'll tell you two or three guys that were really good guys to talk to on those teams.
Oh, wow.
Hey, let me hop in here, Liv, real quick. Hey, Dave, since you're on the NBA, I'll follow in your tweets. And I know you've been very vocal about these guys with the COVID test and Bradley and all these guys, man.
Yeah.
They have a responsibility as professional athletes to do what they need to do. Can you speak to that, what Kyrie is doing and these guys are doing?
Well, I just think – here, Robert, I think it's the thing that I'm – That bothers me about this is, you know, athletes talk all the time, no matter what sport it is, unless it's golf or tennis or one of them individual sports. But if it's a team sport, the first thing you hear is we have to sacrifice for the good of the team. Like, I got to give up shots. I got to give up minutes. I got to give up rotation, my place in the rotation, if it helps the team do better. Right. And everybody tries to buy into that. Now, it doesn't always work, but people try, right? They try to do what is necessary for the team to do the best, right? So I don't know how you then fold in, but I'm not going to get this shot, and I'm going to increase my risk of getting COVID and not being able to play. Right. How does that fit in with I'm going to do whatever is necessary to help this team win? You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't fit to me in that kind of discussion. So if you're about winning, this isn't even like, what is the sacrifice here? You get a shot in your arm. What are we talking about? Like, why would that be something that you would say, no, I can't do that? Why?
Like, these guys are sacracrificing millions for that. 31 million for Andrew Wiggins, man.
I just don't understand that. Like if you're about trying to win, I'm about winning. I just want to win. Okay. Well, this will help you win because this will mean this will give you more chance to be on the floor.
Right.
And it'll give you less chance of passing COVID along to your teammates, first of all. You know what I'm saying? You know, and the thing that I don't get with Bradley is that Bradley was on a team that got laid out by COVID last year. They had seven guys test positive for COVID. They didn't play for 2 weeks last season. It wasn't 10 years ago. It was last season, you know? And so if anybody could understand what COVID can do to a team, it should be Brad. Right. And that's what I don't get. That's what I don't get about his position. I don't understand it.
Yeah. That's a good question, Bob. Good one, Bob. Did his little homework, okay?
No, I follow him on Twitter. That's real time.
And you guys know this. I love Brad as a guy. He is a stand-up brother in every way. So this isn't about me saying he's not a good dude or he's not a professional.
Not at all.
It's not it. I'm just saying this is an easy one. This is an easy one.
I don't understand. Sam convinced me to get the shot. Him and Tracy Deal.
Real talk. You know these brothers. Some of these players are putting things into their bodies they don't have any idea where. Come on now. There ain't no labels on some of these things that you're putting in your bodies now.
That's fine.
Come on now.
Oh boy. So Dave.
Oh God. All
right. You went to DeMatha High School.
I did, yeah.
Imagine that's a when you mentioned DC, you and talk about high school basketball, you have to mention DeMatha High School.
Yeah.
When you were there, who were some of the legends that was walking through those hallways?
Well, when I was there, Adrian Branch was a senior when I was a sophomore. So he was 2 years ahead of me. And you know, he went on to play at Maryland, played for the Lakers for a minute. So he was the best player on those teams. And then my year, there were guys these are guys that just they weren't pros, but Benny Bolton played on a team, went and played at NC State. Quentin Jackson played at NC State. You know, we had guys that we had a lot of D1 guys. When I was a senior, Danny Ferry was a freshman.
Okay.
So Danny was the next guy, the next one to kind of come up to kind of get to the higher levels, right? So Danny was a few years behind me. And the talent was there. The program was so, like, you just expected to win the championship every year. You know, I can't even, you know, it's just like, if you lost, you were like, what, how did we lose? You know what I mean? Like, and they just expected to roll that way. And they did. Every year I was there, we won the city title. And we played against some good teams. We played against Dunbar 1 year, when Anthony Jones, who wound up playing at Georgetown and UNLV. You know, we played some good teams. We played, Spingarn actually beat us. I don't know. Now, this is back in the day. Sherman Douglas was on that team. And Earl Jones, who wound up getting drafted number one by the Lakers, was on that team. So Spingarn was the only team in my era that beat us, you know, and they had, I mean, Sherman was great, as you guys know, wanted to play in the NBA for many years.
Yeah. Sherman Douglas. And who was that one guy or players that you felt culturally changed the game a little bit? You know, they came in rough and they stayed rough, but they still captivated some of the other side, you know, people.
Oh, I mean, AI is at the top of the list to me. I mean, Allen's at the top of that list because Allen never changed who he was and made everybody, I don't want to say conform, but everybody emulate him. Like, he didn't try to fit in. I'm gonna cut my hair, I'm gonna wear a suit. You know, he just did, for a lot of different reasons, you know, wasn't gonna do that. Allen stayed true to who he was. And everybody came to him, you know what I mean? And so there's no question in my mind that after MJ and Kobe, Allen was the most important player of these last 25, 30 years because of his skill level, of his talent, but also young guys emulated him. Young guys started wearing braids, they started getting inked up. That's all because of Allen. You know, I mean, that's Allen. Right.
Yeah.
He did
yeah.
all of that. And was an MVP and got his team to the finals. So he won on the court as well, was successful on the court. So yeah, there's no question to me, culturally, Allen had a huge impact on these last 20 years of guys in the league.
Wow. It's interesting you say that again, man. Because look, I want you to check this out. Check this out.
First of all, I want to thank you. Gave me respect, man. I always appreciated that. Give respect, you get it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. 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 I mean, Allen and I always had a good relationship, you know, and I didn't always agree. And obviously, Allen made mistakes. We all know what some of them are. And sometimes you had to just like with Bradley, sometimes you disagree with what a guy does. You have to say it. You have to write it to be true to yourself and what you do for a living. But he never took it personally. He understood, you know, so we always had a good relationship, always. Whether I was at ESPN when we started and I did a story on him, like a month into his pro career, you know, like for ESPN. And we would go up there, you know, once or twice a year because he was a big, big star, you know, immediately. And then when I went to Turner, it was the same thing. Like we always, and we come from different places. You know what I'm saying? Like I, mm-hmm. you know, we come up, we have different backgrounds. We have different influences on our lives, but I respected him and he respected me. And I always appreciated that.
Yeah, David, he was definitely one of my favorite players to watch, you know, when he was playing in the NBA and at Georgetown.
Yeah, no question. And I give John should get all the credit for that. You know, mm-hmm. when AI says John saved his life, he's not kidding. Like, that's not hyperbole. Like, John saved his life. Like, you would not have survived if John hadn't intervened, you know. So,
I'm assuming you saw him coming through the high school.
Because sure. We all knew who Allen was. Oh, yeah. You know, like that area, Tidewater down in, you know, Newport News area, a lot of guys came from there. You know, Alonzo came from, there's a lot of guys that came from Newport News area. So we always were aware, even, you know, it's not like that's not really the DMV, but we knew, we always kept an eye on who's coming up out of that part of Virginia, Southeast Virginia. Okay. And he was the guy. You know, like everybody knew who AI was. Like he was going to be a big star. And you guys know, I'm sure he was a better football player than he was a basketball player.
That's what I heard.
Dude was like a ridiculous quarterback. You know, you know what I mean? He would have been like a read option guy like you see now. He was doing that mm-hmm. 30 years ago. You know, like, yeah, he would have been an insanely good football player if he had stuck with that.
We got a question right here, Dave. I want to show it to you. And, sure. Can you read that, Bob?
Yep.
Freddie Moores, Mr. Alges, as the father of a female player, what are your feelings, outlook on the future of the WNBA? Heavy foreign influx of players are staying more domestic driven?
I think, you know, honestly, it's a good question, Freddie. I think, honestly, because of the finances of the WNBA right now, I can't see them really spending a lot of money to bring foreign players over. Like the NBA, well, you know, NBA teams can spend $1 million to get a guy out of his contract to get him over here, whatever the buyout is on a guy like that, of that caliber. I don't know that WNBA teams are going to do that. So my guess, and it's just a guess because I'm no expert on the WNBA, but my guess is that they will continue to be more kind of domestic in terms of the college, use the college draft and to bring in the vast majority of their players, just because whatever the number is to buy out a star player who's playing abroad, dude, I mean, I just read this yesterday, you know, they're still flying commercials. So they got to take 3 flights. You know what I mean? Like, and then the semifinals. What? And you got to take 3 flights to get to the next city? That's crazy. Like, that's crazy. I can't believe that. It's crazy.
Hey, Dave, I want to ask him something, Lib.
I thought the NBA was backing them, though.
No, well, they are, but on things like this, like I remember when the Mystics were in the, you know, when they won in 2019, we were, they were playing Las Vegas, and literally the league, the WNBA, had to kind of buy a private jet for the Aces to go straight from Vegas to either Connecticut or to DC, which I can't remember which city it was. And it was like a big story because they never do that. You know, they had never done that before. And so they were able to actually just fly like normal, you know, like NBA teams have done for 20 years.
Right.
You get on the plane, you go to the next city, right? So, and yeah, it's crazy that they still have to do that. But no, the NBA it's funny. Like they talk about subsidizing it, but they don't really subsidize
it. they're not dribbling right enough money.
Yeah. I mean, but you spend money to make money, right? So if you put money into the product so that it's a better product, you would make more money. You know what I'm saying? These players, they're tired. You know, like
let me ask you something, David, real quick, man.
Yeah.
You've been around sports for like a dinosaur. Did you ever think you live to see the day when these kids are getting paid for their likeness?
No, because I never thought the NCAA would be that would be forced by the courts, basically by the Supreme Court, to do it. You know, I thought they would keep that monopoly going forever. But, you know, Ed O'Bannon started that process many years ago. And the fruits of his labor are finally paying off. And I'm happy for these kids. You know, they should get a little, well, they should get paid, frankly. But since that's not going to happen, at least let them make a little on the side, which is what this deal is, basically. So if they can make some on the side, I'm all for that. You know, these guys and these young ladies that have, you know, it's basically free labor. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous that somebody that plays at North Carolina or Duke or Illinois or any of the top schools in the country can't get paid for that when they generate so much money. I don't even know what the current TV contract is for the tournament, but it's in the billions of dollars. Ooh. You know what I'm saying? Like billions that they're getting. Billions, you know, multiple billions. And those kids should get a taste of that.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. David, what you in the field of being a reporter at these games, have you ever caught yourself watching it more so than when you're supposed to be writing and taking notes down, that you jump out of your seat and say, I can't believe that, Jesse?
All the time, Mark. All the time. In fact, I remember one time when the Rockets were playing Dallas in the playoffs and McGrady dunked on, I think he dunked, I can't remember who it was for Dallas, but McGrady dunked on somebody so hard that I screamed.
Was it Sean Bradley?
It was Sean Bradley. That's who it was. That's exactly who it was. So he dunked on Sean Bradley so hard that I screamed in my seat. My producer was like, you can't do that. I was just like, oh my God, you know, like, oh, that was all the time. Like, because what guys could do athletically, that's why I love doing what I did for so long, because you still could get excited. I could still get excited watching somebody do something I hadn't seen before. You know, so it happened all the time. Or, you know, whether it was a great kind of individual athletic thing or watching a team play. Like, I remember when, you know, in 14 when the Spurs beat Miami, it was just beautiful. Like that they just played beautifully. You just enjoyed watching that. I'm watching the ball move, bop, 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 bop to the next guy, and everybody, you know, and they were all making shots and Ginobili dunking on people. And that was just like, man, that was sensational. But then you can always appreciate kind of the individual, you know, brilliance of a Kobe or, you know, some of the other greats that play over the years, watching guys work. It was just phenomenal, you know. And so, yeah, I never root for teams because and people don't believe me. And it's not because – it's just because it doesn't matter. Like, it,
right.
It doesn't matter. I still have to work. You know what I mean? Like, no matter which team wins, I still have to work. So it doesn't matter. But I could appreciate Dame. Dame is my favorite player in the league right now.
Oh,
I love watching Dame play. I love watching Dame play. He's just phenomenal.
I like him too. I like
yeah. So to be able to appreciate a guy like that that can, you know, just be so dominant at his size, you know. But I always got a soft spot for the big guys too, because I think the big guys get overlooked in this era, especially because I, you know, Wes Unseld was the coach for the Bullets when I covered, and I would talk to Wes a lot about, you know, him playing in back in the day against Willis Reed and Nate Thurman and Bill Russell and Chamberlain and all those guys. And those guys built the league. You know what I mean? So I want them to always be. They should always be honored. And sometimes I worry that with the game going so small and going.
To be losing.
I think his screen is frozen right quick.
Yeah.
But like he was saying, he loved the fact that the big man, you know. I think David Aldridge is just like, man, he's just. MVP. Is this MVP, Liv?
Yeah, you know, no, he's definitely in my book, man. One of the great ones, and we didn't get a chance, but we will ask him when he come back on about. We didn't like somebody put it on the timeline. I don't know if you saw it, Bob, but like a trade wasn't really solidified until we heard David Aldridge say it's such has been traded. You know,
right, we didn't, right.
We heard it out of his mouth. You know,
right, so you're right.
It's
now they got Woj doing it, huh?
Yeah. So hopefully, you know, he'll come back and join us if he can. But we had him for a while, so it was good to have him, you know, come on the show.
Well, you know, actually, man, I want somebody to come over here and pinch me because I've been watching this dude on TV forever.
Right.
And I'm sitting up here, I get to do an intro for this man. You feel me? Like, right, can't nobody take that away from me.
No, man. I mean, it's Friday, man. And I'm definitely excited that we had him to come on and talk about basketball. I wanted to touch a little bit about.
He'll be back.
Chicago, too. I want him to touch on some of the Chicago guys that he covered throughout the NBA. Yep, here he comes now. So we want to talk a little bit about that. So here he is.
Sorry about that, fellas. I don't know what happened.
That's all right. It happens, man, to the best of us, man. Then Bob, you know, we kept it going. So but let's go ahead and jump on right into Chicago, man. Like,
yeah.
I know you watched The Last Dance. I've been on, but we didn't get an opportunity to talk about it, you know,
yeah,
to someone like yourself, you know, who
yep.
actually went through that era and saw.
Yeah.
What do you think about the way Mike was talking about the players?
You mean his teammates?
Yeah, his teammates.
I mean, that was Mike, right? whatever you think about that, I would say it's not the easiest. It's not easy to play with Mike. I there's no question. It wasn't easy to play with Mike, right? It wasn't. It was hard. He made it hard. But that was him. Like, that was who he was. He was maybe a little crazier than Magic and Bird and Isaiah, but they all kind of did the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, they were all kind of the same guy. You know, he may have taken it to the extreme, but they were all hard on their teammates, all of them, you know? So, so that didn't surprise me. I was actually glad that people got to see what it was really like, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just like when he did his Hall of Fame speech and everybody got mad. And I'm like, what are you mad about? That's him. That's the guy. That's why he won six. Because he's insane. That's, you know what I mean? He's a crazy person. You know, so that's why he was as great as he was. Because he was so just ridiculously competitive to the point of making everybody uncomfortable around him. Everybody, you know. And so... You know, and that's not for everybody. I understand that. That's not for everybody. But the guys that stayed, and you know, they've all talked about it, that he made them tougher. He made them made them meaner, you know, and they were able to get through Detroit, which had, you know, owned them basically, you know, up until that 91 season, they couldn't get past Detroit. Yeah. You know, and I remember I covered all of those series with Detroit and Chicago, and I remember Laimbeer just laying out Scottie Pippen the year before. Like, just in the first minute of the game, just came up and cracked him with an elbow and knocked him out. You know? And that's what they did. Like, and you gotta be able to stand up to that. Until you do, you're not gonna beat him. And they finally got mentally tough enough to stand up to that. And so It's like I said, it's not for everybody, but I think Michael was, you know, the best I ever saw. I mean, he's the best I ever saw. Yeah.
Wow. And Kobe, and I think Kobe took a little of that, you know, the pace.
Took some of it. I've always said Kobe was the closest thing to Michael, but he wasn't Michael.
Right.
<You know>?
Right. he did definitely take a page of it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, well, we on the Chicago Bulls. Scottie Pippen recently come out with comments that Phil Jackson's a racist. What the heck is he talking about, man?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Look, Phil likes to talk about posses and things like that all the time, which are kind of stupid things to say. Do I think Phil's a racist? No. I mean, I don't know. I would say he may be insensitive to some things in the way he talks, especially about the modern players today. To me, I think LeBron is one of the most incredible success stories of all time. You know what I mean? None of his guys getting any trouble. You know what I mean? Like, you never hear about any of his crew getting into any kind of trouble. You know what I mean? Right. So they all fly right. They all do the right things. They tried, you know, they build up a business on their own. Mavericks built a business. Rich Paul has become a big time agent. You know, now it all flows from LeBron. We all understand that. But they were able to take that and make something for themselves out of that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I think he should be commended. They should be commended, you know? Mm-hmm. So for Phil to dismiss them as his posse, it just sounds stupid. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
it's not,
right.
They're not just sitting at his apartment eating his food. You know what I mean? Like, you know, doing something with the opportunity they had. I used to always say this about Gary Payton. Gary had guys that Gary helped financially. Those guys built businesses. Those guys became contributing members of their communities. And so that's a good thing. That's a great thing, as a matter of fact, they were able to take what he gave them and make something for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think it's tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah. Now let's talk about last year a little bit, the NBA.
Yeah.
Before the season started last year, you know, we went through the COVID, you know, protocol and all that, and then they ended up having a season this past season. Did you think, when you saw it, the beginning of the season's kickoff, that Milwaukee will be the team cutting down the nets and getting the championship?
Nope. Did not.
Who was that team?
I thought it would be Brooklyn. I thought Brooklyn was going to be too much to overcome. You know, just too much. There's just too much firepower there. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you can't. There's no way you can stop them all. You probably can't stop two thirds of them. You know what I mean? So, like, even if you threw all your resources at trying to stop KD, Kyrie would kill you. Harden would kill you, and vice versa, right? So, you just couldn't stop them all. You just can't. You can't double team everybody, right? You know what I mean? So, so I thought they would be, and I still believe if they hadn't gotten the injuries, they would have been in the finals. Mm-hmm. You know. But they did, and you can't. I'm not dismissing. Milwaukee gets all the credit. They played who was it? They played who was on the schedule. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's all you can do. They played the team that was on the schedule, and they beat everybody. So they get props for winning the championship. But I thought last year Brooklyn was the team to beat. I think going into this year, Brooklyn's the team to beat just because they've got so much.
Did you think they're gonna beat the Lakers?
Yes, if they get
there. I said that too.
Yeah,
I ain't got Bron this year, man.
I'll tell you why, because I think the Lakers could definitely get to the finals. Because I think old guys know how to play. Well, old guys, it's just about staying healthy. If they can stay healthy, they will do well in the playoffs because they know how to play. But the problem is staying healthy and getting through those 82 games. But if they got to the finals, if you just line them up, again, it's the same problem everybody else does. How do the Lakers stop all of that? You know what I mean? Like, how do they stop all those guys? You can't guard KD. You just can't. There's nothing you can do but hope he misses. He's unguardable. Like, if he's going to get to his spot, he's 7 feet tall. You're not blocking his shot. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know how you stop him. You know, so we'll see, though. I could be wrong.
A couple of our listeners, they are writing on our timeline. No way the Lakers will beat Brooklyn in six games. AD will be the MVP this season. He said, yeah, we tripping.
I would respectfully disagree with that.
I mean, the Lakers are nice. They got a nice
squad. No, they're good. I think Russell will help them, actually, because Russ plays hard all the time.
Yeah.
One thing you can bet is that Russ going to bring it every night. And
it's a lot of people.
Will help LeBron, I think, get through the season.
Yeah, it's a lot of people, David, that they always want to throw this out there. You know, Michael Jordan is better than LeBron. LeBron is better than, you know, MJ. You know, it's so many. I just say, and you probably agree with this. That was basically that's what we saw dominate. Mike wants to take that last shot, you know, and then vice versa. People talk about LeBron and say, well, he won't take that last shot. He'll make that correct pass to the guy wide open in the corner.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? Like when people start talking about the GOAT, you know, the GOAT in our
Well, I mean, it's nuanced, and people don't like to talk about nuance and subtlety these days, but it's not a cut and dried thing. Number one, again, the rules are completely different than they were 30 years ago. So you can't compare unless you tell me we're all going to play by the same amount of rules, the same kind of rules. Then I can guess who I think might be best. But again, are we playing 80s rules? Are we playing today's rules? Are we playing 60s rules? You know what I mean? Like, so, like, I didn't see Wilt play. All I can do is look at the numbers in the book, which are just insane. You know what I mean? Like, like if it was easy to do, somebody else would average 50 a game. But they didn't. He did. So he must have been much greater than everybody else that ever played in that era, right? So to me, it's impossible to compare because the games are so different now. And you're right. LeBron's a pass-first guy. Mike's a shoot-first guy. They're different. You know, so it's not an apples to apples comparison. If you're asking me the question, my answer has been, again, Michael Jordan's the best I ever saw, and it's not particularly close to me. To me.
Right. You say it's not close?
I don't think it's close. Mm-mm. Not to me. Not to me. Michael is, again, I didn't see Wilt play. I didn't see Bill Russell play. I can only go by what people who did see them tell me. But among the players I've seen, he's the best I've ever seen. You know, LeBron is in the discussion. We can have a discussion about it. I can tell you why I think Michael's better than LeBron, even though it's, a kind of silly comparison because, again, they're completely different players. But but I think Michael's better than LeBron. I think Michael's better than Kobe. He's just better to me. I think it's not just the physical gifts, which are substantial, the mental toughness that he had was just, I've never seen anybody like that had the will he had. Nobody I've ever seen had the will that he had. I just can't even describe it. You just had to kind of see it. You saw it. I mean, you saw, you know, how. And again, it's not about stats because I tell people all the time, I saw lots of games where Michael was 9-22 from the floor. Lots of them, you know, but he still impacted those games more than anybody I've ever seen has impacted games night in and night out.
And I think also, David, that we had Randy Brown on our show, and Randy Brown was talking about, man, our practices with Mike was harder than the game.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, Mike brought it. You know, he had a standard that he demanded everybody uphold. And when they didn't, as you saw in the Last Dance with my man Burrell, poor Burrell, you know, like he killed him. You know, and he drove out. Look, you guys know Dennis Hopson? Was a great college player. Draft, you know, and he got to Chicago, and Mike killed him. He just ran him out of town. You know? And
Horace Grant said he'll ride you out the league. I didn't know
exactly. you know, and it was, and it was different back then because it wasn't as much social media. Because, you know, Mike would have, if there had been social media back then, Mike would have gotten dinged up a little bit. I'll just put it that way. Yeah. You know, didn't have to worry about that. <You know? Right>. but there wasn't, so he didn't have to worry about it.
Oh, right. Boy. So do you think if Mike wouldn't have retired, how many championships you think he would have had?
Well, I agree with Steve Kerr has said this, and I agree with him. I don't think there's any way they would. I think they were done after the first one, and they were certainly done after the second three-peat. I don't think they had anything left. You know, I think Mike would have. I don't know if he would have. I mean, I just don't think they would have won four in a row at any point. I just think it's too hard. It's too hard. You know, the they beat everybody, but it wasn't like they blew everybody out. You know what I mean? Like they beat Utah, but it was a hard six. It wasn't easy. You know what I mean? Right. So if they had come back, you know, with no breaks, essentially playing, I mean, I added up one time, they wound up playing like two extra seasons just with the playoff games, you know, the equivalent of two extra seasons. Yeah, just with the playoff games. And that catches up with you after a while. I don't care who you are. Just physically you break down, you get hurt, you know. And so I think they would have physically, they would have had some breakdowns, whether it was Michael or Scotty or, you know, one of the key guys, I think would have broken down. So that's why I think the break actually helped them a lot.
Yeah. Who was who you think should be mentioned as a role model? You know, for our young generation now. I mean, I would think LeBron James.
Of course. Yeah, I would definitely say LeBron. I mean, again, LeBron has, when you look at everything, like LeBron's one of the few guys that's actually lived up to the hype, right? Like he came out, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was 16 and all that. I remember this like it was yesterday. So I was, you know, we do draft previews and stuff like that. So this would have been like 2000 or 2001, right? And I don't think he'll mind me telling this story. So I was talking to Joe Dumars, who was in Detroit at the time. He's the GM. And, you know, I was asking him about some draft prospect, some guy that was going to be at the top of the draft or high in the 2000 or 2001 draft. And I remember him saying, David, none of this matters. The best player in the world is a 15-year-old kid in Akron, Ohio. Wow. And I said, what? What? What do you mean? And he said, the best player in the world is a sophomore at this high school in Akron, Ohio.
What?
And I literally said, who are you talking about? He said, LeBron James better than anybody in the league right now. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And he told me about it. And that's the first time I heard LeBron. It's the first time Joe Dumars told me, you know? And wow. So, yeah. And so, yeah, he's lived up to all of it. All of it.
He really has.
On and off.
And went further with it. Absolutely. With his off-court antics, man. Yes. The things that he's been able to accomplish. And I Absolutely. Think that's where people get mad, Dave, when, like, Bron had been to the title game 10 times in a row, what he won, four or five of them.
Right.
And then,
right.
And then that's where the comparison with Michael falls off with people.
Right.
But he's I a get much it. Greater person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my thing is, again, this isn't tennis or golf. You don't do this by yourself, okay? Like, you know,
right,
you
know, right.
You have to have the right teammates, right year. Guys got to be healthy, whatever, you know. And you're playing somebody else that's good too, right? So you're not, you don't just, they don't give you the championship because you're in the finals. You got to go get it, you know. Yeah. So right. He got the ones that he could get, you know. So right. You know, like, so, but the fact that, like you mentioned, 10 years in a row, come on, like, that's absurd. That's crazy. Like, who does, nobody's done that since Bill Russell. It's Bill Russell.
Right.
Michael didn't even do that. Bill Russell and LeBron, those are the only two guys that have done that. Right. So you have to give him his respect just to get to 10 finals in a row, right? And so, and then you add building the businesses off the court, building the media empire off the court, you know, and to me, like the fact that, look, we all have opinions about politics and the foreign president, who I'm not going to mention by name. But LeBron's the guy to hit send on that tweet, okay? LeBron's the guy to call him a bum to the whole world. And that tells me, you know, like, and you notice he ain't come back at LeBron like he comes back at everybody else because he knew he couldn't win that one. LeBron's going to beat him on that one. So I have big respect for LeBron for just doing, for having the not courage, that's not the word, but just understanding that his that what he says has some value and has some meaning to people and would help a lot of people that didn't have his voice stand up and speak out, that was a big thing to me. Big.
Before we let you go, David, I want to ask a question about, or I want you to answer this question. Derrick Rose, if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, where do you think he stacks among some of the greats?
He was great. He would have been as great as, you know, he would have been among the best point guards ever. I don't think there's any question about it. Like D. Rose in 2010, man, he was something. Yeah. I actually covered a game when they were down in Orlando. We did a game for TNT. They played him down there. And he got hurt in that game because he went up and he banged on somebody at the rim. And I was like, young fella, you can't keep jumping like that, man. You're going to get hurt. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you just can't keep going at. And he was in that year, you know, his first 2 years in the league, he was banging on everybody, right? So, and, you know, the irony is that he got hurt and it wasn't, it was just kind of a nothing play, you know, like it didn't, like, it wasn't like him trying to elevate or something like that. But yeah, God, if he hadn't gotten hurt, oh my God. You know, he was great. Great. Like, you know, all time great. The series they had with Boston, the playoff series in, what was that, 2009? We did that series. It was one of the greatest series I've ever covered. Mm. You know, and he was like, I was like, this kid is unbelievable. Like, you know, like so this combination of speed, quickness, you know, fearlessness, passing, all of it. He was unbelievable.
Wow. That's our guy, man. D. Rose, man. We love us some D. Rose.
Yeah, no. And you know what? I love that year he won the MVP because we did a sit down with him and his mother. And that was just one of the night. That was one of the most – I enjoyed that as much as any interview I've done because you just knew how special it was to them as a family that he had been able to kind of rise up and get to where he got. And he's a Chicago kid. I mean, come on, man. You can't do better than this. This is as good as it gets, right? You know what I mean? So, like, I just love talking to him. And over the years, you know, I've talked to him in different, you know, his different stops along the way. And the proof to your question is that he's still a contributing good player. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he still helps teams win games, lots of them, because he's good, because he's a hell of a basketball player, you know? It's just that physically he can't do quite what he used to do, but he can still hoop now. So, you know, so he was one of the best. He would have certainly been among the best point guards of all time if he hadn't gotten hurt, to me.
All right. So tell some of our listeners what you're up to now so they can find you or follow you or whatever.
Yeah, I'm running the DC Bureau of the Athletic, which is a subscriber website. If you haven't heard of it, it's basically a subscriber-based website. We don't take any ads, so there's no pop-up ads, there's none of that stuff that people get sick of. You pay your $5.95 a month, you get everything. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if you live in Chicago and you love the Chicago teams, you pay your $5.95, you'll get Bulls, you'll get Bears, you'll get Cubs, you'll get Blackhawks, you get White Sox, you get everything. You get DePaul, you get all of it. Wow. We have people covering everything. In whether it's Chicago or Philly or DC or LA, we cover all the pro teams. We cover most of the college teams, cover the WNBA. So you can take whatever you want out of that. You can do whatever. If you just want to follow University of Texas football, okay. We got somebody who covers that. You know what I'm saying? So that's our model. And I run the DC Bureau because I'm a DC guy and I wanted to get back home because we got two sons. My sons are 17 and 14 and I need to be in front of them. You know, you know what I mean? Like it was just that time. Yeah. It was that time in their lives and in my life that I had to be in front of them and talk to them about some things, you know, and still trying to. Hope they're listening.
That's the perfect time, though, around that age. But before you go, David, I got to show you something, man.
Sure.
Okay, so I created the world's first social distance device. It's called the Culture, man. It's a wireless headset. There you go. And it's a voice amplifier, capable of amplifying the voice 500 square feet. So you can charge it up yourself for the last 14 to 16 hours. So people are using it all over the place, man. So keep an eye on that. And then there's one last thing I want to throw something out to you before we get out of here, Liv. Right. Me and Liv talk about sports a lot. about like when guys walk away from the game and them trying to find themselves, you know, because they can't find themselves. Yeah. What can we do to address that before we get up out of here? Because we've been hearing a lot of that.
Yeah, it's a tough question, Rob. It's not easy. If it was easy, we would have figured out some way to do it. And I can't speak to it because I wasn't a pro athlete, okay?
Okay,
but,
okay.
But people that were all kind of tell me the same thing. It's like you died, but you're still alive. You know what I mean? Right. And so, I can only empathize with that. I can't tell you, oh yeah, I know what that's like, because I don't know what it's like. But when you were at the highest level of whatever it is that you do for a living, and it stops, it that messes with you. You know what I mean? Like we try not to identify ourselves by what we do, but we all do it, right? We all fall into that. You know, I'm a baller, I'm a writer, I'm a rapper, I'm a lawyer, I'm whatever it is. And if that's taken away from you for whatever reason, it's hard to kind of figure out, well, who am I now? You know what I mean? And it's hard. It's hard. And I don't think it's so much about being famous or any of that. I'm sure some guys get off on that, but I think most of the guys, it's not about that. It's about this thing that I've loved doing since I was a kid, I can't do anymore. You know what I mean? Right. And it's hard to kind of pivot off of that to what do I do now? Because whatever it is that I do, I'm probably not going to be as good at that as I was at this. You know what I mean? Right. Like I can make a living at it, but I'm not great at it. You know, and that's hard to get. It's hard to deal with. I can't tell you I know what that feels like, but I can. I have an idea. I have a suspicion that will be very hard to deal with. And on top of that, it's the financial change in your life. If you've been living in a certain lifestyle and now that income's not coming in, that's another thing, another challenge, you know? So these things are not easy to deal with. I do think that the NBA has done a better job. I'll say this, the union, I think, is doing a much better job the last few years of kind of trying to get guys to understand that when their careers end, that doesn't mean they do, you know, that they have value. And they have to find other things, other avenues where they can kind of, whether they want to compete or not, or whether they want to make money, they can do some of those things in different areas. But again, it's a mental health thing too. I mean, it's just really hard to make that adjustment to being, and you guys will know this because I think I'm older than both of you, but I may not be, but I think I am. As you get older, this starts to happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It starts to happen. And you have to kind of like, it's hard to deal with. Like you're used to a certain, living in a certain reality of yours. And then that reality changes for whatever reason. And it's hard to deal with it. It's hard to deal with change of that magnitude. So, you know, but for ballers especially, it's really, really difficult, I think. And it's not easy. And I would never, you know, pretend like I know what it's like or that it, oh, come on, just buck up. No. This is something that takes a minute to get past, to find something else that you're passionate about that gets you going. And it's hard.
Yes. I agree, man. David, man, we appreciate you coming on our show today. It was a great one. We always try to get some good people, reputable and knowledgeable, to share some information with our listeners. But we want to know, before you go, what podcast? Yes, what's the number one podcast, baby?
You mean besides Hoops Adjacent? My podcast, besides that one? Okay, so if I was let's say Hoops Adjacent is the number two podcast. Okay. The number one podcast that I've heard of is this All Ball Chicago podcast. That's my man. That's what I've heard.
My man. We appreciate that, man. And anytime, man, you want to come back on. And
absolutely, guys. You know, anytime. I'll be happy to talk to you about, you know, once the season gets started, we can talk about the Bulls and how they're doing. I think they might be pretty good. I think they could be pretty good. I like the moves they made this summer.
I say the same thing. So, man, we appreciate you. And best wishes, man, and stay safe.
Okay, you too. Thanks,
David. Boston, baby.
All right, y'all. We good now.
All right, big guy.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.